This podcast is brought to you by Liquidware. Liquidware is the leader in adaptive workspace management solutions for Windows desktops. Their products cover all facets of management to ensure the ultimate user experience across all workspaces, physical, virtual, DAS, or cloud.
At the third stroke, it will be...
Hello and welcome to the EUC Digest, your bi-weekly audio snack on everything EUC related. In today's show, we'll be talking about all kinds of different realities, virtual, augmented, and mixed reality. So today's topic is extended reality. But before we dive into all kinds of realities, please allow us to introduce ourselves. My name is Ingmar Verheij, and I'm your host for this episode. And with me is Jitz Langendijk. Hey Jitz, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, Ingmar. Good to be here again.
Yeah, and you know, good to virtually see you again or hear you again, because it's been a while.
Absolutely, yeah. For all those listeners, we're still under this pandemic COVID-19 spell. Well, not really honest to call it a spell, but then again, so we are all challenging and working from home, juggling all the different balls.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I guess the new reality is somewhat strange. So, I mean, I guess as a result, I can say I'm truly excited about this episode and the topic of extended reality, not just because I tend to reject reality and substitute my own, but obviously, I mean, the extended reality or XR space, it's hot, right? It's trending. It's also under pressure. I think last month I saw an article that Google acquired NextVR. You know, it's a tech company that captures and delivers live and on-demand virtual reality experiences. And, you know, with my calendar basically clearing up for 2020, all my conferences are canceled. At least my employer told me there will be no conferences for me this year to attend. I'm open up for, you know, new ways of experiencing those conferences. So let's see what Google does with that. And, you know, and it's also under pressure because last week, I think we saw some news on Magic Leap. You know, they provide spatial computing for enterprises. So it's, you know, it's an interesting space, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. And last week, one of my colleagues who's working out of France, and he's been working with, mainly virtual reality in the last couple of years. And I have to be honest, I forgot the name of the event. He always shows up. But this was moved to a, as all the events now, right? Moved to a digital event. But they use this platform where you can actually use your VR headset at home and just walk around the place. And it was really immersive, experience where you just walk up to people and, okay, you're talking to an avatar. But then again, he had almost like the real experience, as he told us. And he met with people he would usually not, meet it in an online event where you're just listening to a webinar, for example. So... he was really, really enthusiastic about this. So maybe this is the new reality as well in this time.
Yeah. You know, before I wasn't open up to it, but now I am. But I mean, before we lose track of reality, what did you find out about our guest?
Yeah. Some interesting facts, to be honest. So, did you know our guest is a part-time petrol head? He's a real car enthusiast, but. Remember, it's a part-time, right? So he drives his old, nice, vintage Porsche 356 or 65. I don't know exactly the type. We have to ask him. But he also has the Citroën C5 brake. And according to his website, he even has a MPV, right?
All right. Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah. So that's a question to ask.
Yeah. So and he's father of 1.5 childs. Yeah, that can be challenging, right? And he got married in shorts. And more importantly, he's a real gadget freak, always playing around with the best toys available. So, we definitely have to ask him about this.
Well, I mean, if you still don't know who our guest is, or, you know, can you please introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hello. My name is Thomas Poppenborg, the guy married in shorts.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Thank you for being on our show today. I mean, that was interesting. I mean, the Porsche, wow. Obviously, the Citroën is kind of interesting. That's something else, right, compared to the Porsche. And on the website, we notice it says that you are an MPV and a CTP. But I guess that has to be MVP, right? Microsoft Value Professional. So that was kind of an inside joke we noticed when we were browsing your website. But, I mean, could you please explain to our listeners who you are, what you do, and, you know, for what people can recognize you?
Yeah. The MVP part is the Microsoft Most Valued Professional. I've been that a couple of years where I'm awarded in enterprise mobility, and I'm associated together with the remote desktop service, you know, the terminal server team, who is also the inventors behind the Windows Virtual Desktop. So, you know, the hot new thing. I've been that a couple of years, so it's pretty exciting actually to work close together with Microsoft and, you know, help them and share my insights and so on with what I have. So I'm pretty, to be honest, I'm very proud of that, about that one. And then the other one I have is the CTP award. And I've been having that since 2013. And of course, I'm super humble of being part of that. The CTP is, of course, the Citrix Technology Professional Award, which is around, how many people is it now? It used to be 50, and now it's a little bit more, but not that many.
50-ish, right?
Yeah. 50-ish, yeah. And, of course, I'm super humbled to work together with Citrix in the different product teams as well. And it makes sense, right? Because Citrix and VM and Microsoft has this very old relationship as a husband and wife. So it's nice to have a foot in each camp.
Yeah, yeah. I like how you said that.
Yeah, maybe we before we start, right, Thomas, you mentioned being active in several communities, but also awarded as a MVP and a CTP. Is community or like this these awards are those important to you? And are you part of any other communities or
award programs? Right, I do have a lot of them, and that means I've been in the use computing for a while. I'm an independent consultant, and I use a lot of time in the different with working with the vendors. So I'm awarded by Microsoft. I'm also awarded by Citrix, and I'm of course awarded by not of course, but because that this is actually hard work, and then it pays off, right? So it's annual awards. It's not something you get for a lifetime. It's by each year. I'm also by NVIDIA. They have the VGPU advisor. So I'm part of the NGCA, which is also a small team. And then I'm part of VMware, the EUC champion, and a new program called VExpert EUC. And then I'm also a part of Parallels, VIPP. And yeah, I got awarded by last year by Login VSI also in that program. And then I'm doing also to work together with Team RGE, so I'm part of that one. So it's a lot of programs. It makes me very active, right? So I'm never boring. And to be honest, I do spend a lot of time and, you know, having a footprint in each different vendor helps me also in my daily work when I work with customers. So it's, you know, customers I work with is both end customers and customers is also my resellers and cloud providers and even software vendors and hardware vendors. So I work quite broad around the world.
So very active in various communities and always willing to share. So hence the podcast, right, where you can share all your knowledge regarding different kinds of realities. And, and talking about these different kinds of various kinds of realities, can you maybe take a step back and explain us a little bit? Because most people know virtual reality, right, with the head-mounted display. But there are more kinds of different reality, right? We augmented, mixed reality, extended reality. Can you please explain a little bit about the differences between those realities?
Yeah, I can do that. I can also tell you why I'm actually looking at those kind of realities. So what most people are working on is, again, you know, end-user computing, where we do our work with, you know, physical virtual machines. And the thing that is evolutionizing, you know, a long time ago that I was involved in was the GPUs for virtualization and for end-user computing. The reason I actually look at the next generation of technologies, a couple of years ago I started investing heavily in it, is virtual reality. So virtual reality is where you take headsets on and then you go immersive into another world. And then you are, you know, with if you have one controller in, then you can interact. If you have two controller, which is called 60UF, then you can interact with both your hands and you interact in the immersive experience. So, you know, that stuff is something I've been working actually since Oculus, they made the product called DK1. And way back in time, together with Magnusoff from Norway, we prototyped Citrix and actually had that working from Norway to United States live. We actually did it in Synergy, and it was quite amazing because we were running 30 frames per second over 200 millisecond latency. For Citrix, we were actually virtualizing virtual reality for the first time in the world.
And pretty it cool. Yeah.
It was freaking amazing. We put a guy come up on stage, and he wanted to try a roller coaster, right? And at that time, the virtual reality didn't had these cameras for motion sickness. So you get a little bit more, you know, wobbly. You can get pretty sick quickly. And he definitely got a big experience. And if you guys don't, I don't know if you guys remember, but FrameHawk just got acquired by Citrix and were headlining at the keynote. And Rachel Berry, she came in and saw the session we had. And she took the VR equipment, went down to the booth together with Marcel, and they removed the FrameHawk and put in this thing we did with the remote VR. And then, you know, I was there at the demo booth showing VR virtualized.
I remember that vividly, you showing that. Yeah, I wore that as well. And then I remember, was it like in a roller coaster? You were standing behind me, and then at some point I really fell down, like pushing me, you know, like, hey, now you're going down. Like, oh yeah, I can feel it. No, it was really immersive experience. It was really cool. I mean, I guess it is a new reality, right? You're not in the current world, but it is, you know, you're surrounded by an entire digital world. So how would you explain the difference between a virtual reality and then the augmented reality? Because that's way different, right?
Yeah, just to finish off the virtual reality. So virtual reality has been evolving a lot, right? Since where we are now, it's now commoditized. We're also doing 60 frames per second. And, you know, the resolution is just pumping up, you know, the further we go into more and more advanced headsets. And that requires a lot of things then when you want to virtualize. And that's why I work so heavily with it, because when you want to virtualize it, with the technologies you have now, because NVIDIA are also doing that, right? Citrix also have a prototype still. I would call it a prototype, but actually the code is out there. You can do it with the code. There's nothing changed you have to do, not many changes. So you do 90 frames per second, and you can do that with Citrix right now. But NVIDIA has a product called CloudXR, and I work very close together with the VR team inside NVIDIA, who can then on the specific headsets, they then, you know, run. You are taking your high physical compute and virtualizing on a technology. It's actually really mind blowing. You can do that.
So, yeah. Because just you just explained on for Citrix with the developer kit or the Oculus DK1 that you showed the roller coaster on a. Mm-hmm. An incident that was running in Norway or Denmark, not exactly sure, but you had 200 milliseconds of latency. So, but basically, what is the what kind of complexity do you want to take out? Because it's more like usually with a VR, you have this big clunky PC next to you with some cables. And this is something that you want to do remotely, right? Same as what we do with VDI. This is just VDI for virtual reality.
Yeah, so the idea is, of course, is to remove the big compute you have and, you know, run it from the edge or, you know, run it from the cloud. So that's the goal, is to then run, also because now you can get very cheap VR headsets like Oculus Quest or, you know, other headsets, where the problem about these new headsets is the low end is there are no cables, the computer's inside the headset. Qualcomm, you know, technology built into that. Most of them are using Qualcomm. There you're limited with the polygons, what can be rendered, right? And this is why VR creators, they are then created specific content with Unity, and then they're limited the polygons on that. Now, streaming, this is where, you know, streaming is coming in and shining, because now you can stream super, super crazy high end content without any limits, to be honest, right? And then you're streaming that through the headset, because that's where the magic of streaming protocol kicks in. You know, things we take it for granted, like, you know, we used to rent VHS, DVD for movies, right? And then we did the Blockbuster, and now we're doing Netflix, right? Things we take for granted. And that's the same thing I see, which is coming with streaming. Streaming is coming here and will revolutionize how we're working, you know, with VR, but gaming, anything. Streaming is there.
Oh. So I guess before we move to the enterprise, because that's definitely interesting for the most of the audience, but let's talk about consumer space for a little bit. I mean, I think extended reality, you know, basically in a combination of all the virtual realities and augmented realities that we hear, it seems to be pretty accepted and adopted in the consumer space. Can you tell us a little bit where you've seen, where you see this immersive experience being used in the homes? I mean, I guess you've got quite some firsthand experience with this, right? You've got Facebook, Twitter, so like you have like all the glasses and goggles and stuff. Like it seems like they ship it to you first. So can you, you know, talk us through the home use cases?
Yeah. So let me just make clear that I guess I need to also just tell what augmented reality is. Augmented reality is where either you take a headset or you take your phone, and then you look through the phone, and the cameras are seeing what you're doing, and then you actually creating objects, so it looks, you know, like immersive compute that goes into reality, right? Which is where you are, you know, interacting in the real world, and that is actually more comfortable for the most human beings. Is that you take up your phone and then you look through the cameras, and then you know place an object or you put on some smart glasses and you can interact. That helps with training purposes. Now, what I want to make clear for you guys is just I've been investing my own money in a lot of the products with VR and AR. Now, I work together with some vendors that ships me equipment, but that, you know, what I do for them is still, it's my own time. I spend a lot of money into these things, actually to help back even the community in the bigger goal. And I've been doing that for a very long time. Some of the stuff is, I guess I potentially wait before it gets more mature. But I can give you some examples on how close I work together with AR. So when HoloLens 1 came out, I was actually part of the first wave they released. So I got my hands on HoloLens. HoloLens is an augmented reality device, or mixed reality in Microsoft terms, where you put on a headset and then with audio cameras, it can then scan the environment, and it can actually save the environment where you are, and then you can place objects and it can recognize that. That means you can help both for training purposes, or you can also get experience like, you know, playing a game or interacting or having collaboration meetings. And especially here with the COVID-19, you know, it means you don't have to travel. You can actually just put up things and, you know, things can appear in front of you and you can interact. It's a phenomenal future device. But the problem again about this compute device, what I saw was that it had problems with the compute, because again, it's just a device. And that's why, you know, I work in end-use computing, and I think collaboration between the things is so important, that you are not bounded by compute. that you bring the immersive experience to the next step and bring in streaming, because that means then you're not bounded by compute and you can limit the boundaries what the computer has. And even you know, where we are now in 2020, so the HoloLens 2 has got released, but it's still only getting sold for big volumes, you know, for independent guys like me. And there's a lot of developers even out there. I don't have access to the HoloLens 2. I had access to the HoloLens 1. You know, I even actually showed for Denmark what the HoloLens was. I was interviewed by the Computer World magazine and did a lot of videos together with them and educated a lot of people. Very, it could be anybody who actually can read that video that I made together with them. Now, I would love to do that with the HoloLens 2, but you know, this is where Microsoft now is just controlling it and not releasing it for anybody. I've been very lucky to try the HoloLens 2 together with some companies I work with. It's a phenomenal device, but again, this is where I see, you know, it's still limited with the compute, right? And there still needs to be done a lot of stuff with the, you know, how you can use the device. And I cannot continue, and you know, this is where the vendors, they need to be way, way better if they want to get commoditize their products, because otherwise I don't believe in the products. I really, really don't.
No. So, but Thomas, would it be fair to say that with augmented reality, there's not so much need for compute, so that, I mean, you can use your phone to basically have an, you know, augmented reality. You can just point it at an object and he will say, like, you know, this is a book and, you know, this is the author. Or so with virtual reality, obviously there's a lot of, you know, encoding and compute needed. And with augmented reality, at least that's my perception, right? I'm definitely not the expert, but
You played Pokemon Go, right? All the way to the last level.
So but again, here we're limited with the computer that they have, right? So they're limited. It's not like it has real-time ray tracing, you know, it's super crazy advanced compute graphics. But of course, the phone is a quite powerful device, you know, what the computer can do, but it's still bounded what it can do. And that's... But yeah, I would agree. The phones and the tablets are amazing AR devices. And that's the first generation, you know. But where it mind blows people, let me be honest with you, is when you remove your hands, not remove your hands, but you know, you get your hands free. You don't have a device in your hands. You have a device on your head looking out your eyes. Why? Because now you are immersing the experience and you are now, you know, your brain is like, wow, I'm into this. And that's very different than looking at a phone. It's very, very different working on a smart glass.
It's a more immersive experience for sure. Yeah. So I guess before we move to the enterprise, because I'm somewhat stuck in the consumer world here. And I think it bridges very nicely to the enterprise. I mean, are we now at the forefront of extending our reality? I mean, how far away are we from getting like rich data about objects and I mean, like stores or like individuals, like people walking in front of me, like through a digital lens? I mean, we've seen Google Glasses, which I wouldn't say they failed, but I mean, they moved it to the enterprise. How far away are we from either using a phone or a simple, like a very simple glass, and just walking through the streets here whenever we're allowed, and just see like, hey, this is your neighbor, this is age, you know, you chatted with him like 2 weeks ago and, you know, asking about his daughter. I don't know. Is that something that's happening? I mean, I guess with augmented reality, there's a lot of stuff you can do with just basically connecting the dots, right, about people or objects. And I mean, I'm a vivid cycler, and I'm still dying to get my hands on proper glasses where when I'm cycling, I can see like, you know, Ingmar, this is your speed, this is the distance. And by the way, there's a segment coming up. This is your best time. And if you, you know, pick up the pace now, this is just your position in the top 10, whatever. Is this something which is unreal at this point? Or is it just, you know, how far away is it in your opinion?
If you talk about consumer space, so, you know, applications that we take probably potentially for granted is using AR right now. And why? Because they're using the two cameras as minimum for that. So when you do stuff like FaceTime or you do, you know, in via Facebook or via Snapchat or, you know, all the different kind of applications, you're actually able of adding a layer where you are adding graphics on it, right? And then you have an experience. And those things are, a lot of people that don't know it's AR, but that's actually AR experience.
Right. So I guess to me that I see a lot of potential for this in the enterprise too, right? I mean, what if you can use those things around you with, in a meeting or when you're in the office, or I guess it's not bridging that consumer type of applications. I mean, obviously we don't have to search Pokemons in the office, but I can imagine there are use cases for AR in the office, right?
If we take, enterprise application again, all the vendors, what they're doing is they create their own applications, and then they create specific applications where they are, they're doing a specific purpose for each company. That's what the majority is doing with AR. Now, wouldn't it be great that we could start using companies like Citrix or, VMware or potential Microsoft, that we use the native applications and then use the cameras, and we don't have to program each single time for each specific customer, because that's what I'm really missing, that we are like stuff when you put up a video call, right? You just take things for granted. Your microphone is working, your camera is working, you're doing a video conference. You're taking that for granted, right? But I don't think it's that far that we could do the same thing with end-user computing, and then with the tablets and phones, they open up the cameras, and then they open up the legacy application and they could interact. So that could be video, it could be audio. The next thing would be object recognition, interacting, showing stuff, right? And that could help tremendously, really, really tremendously. I can give you some insights on why. A company I worked together with, unfortunately, they got bankrupt. Most of the AR companies, unfortunately, are in that pattern happening, unfortunately. But they made smart glasses, and they had some of the most leading doctors in America, where they wanted to have the application that works in Citrix. But here they do brain surgery. So they use a second monitor, and they actually wait seconds when they look at the monitor, look down at the human where they do the brain surgery. So with the smart glasses, they were actually able of putting on the application. And this was, again, could here be just, pass through to an application like Citrix, right? Just publish the application. And then the doctor doesn't have to move his face to the right to look at the second monitor. And here he actually got it. And this is actually something that these guys were doing a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that this is where there's so many, when we look at smart glasses, they can help. We can save people's life. I'm not kidding you guys. This is so critical device. Unfortunately, technology is not moving so fast as we would like. Even with the COVID-19, right? I'm like... Oh man, it's not moving fast enough, because these devices could help us remove our and the freedom of work with compute, because people are still going to touching devices like keyboards and mouse and other things. Removing these boundaries is helping us on how we can work.
But points out another challenge in this, right? Keyboards and mouse. When you're using just the regular application that we use today, these applications are built for a different kind of interaction with us as human beings. And if we take these applications into a form of a different reality, like you just described, this doctor doing a surgery and is able to see through his smart glasses also some additional information and not needing to move his head around for 90 degrees and maybe use a keyboard and a mouse or ask an assistant to do so. You also need different input devices, maybe voice or hand gestures. Hand gestures is probably also not a really smart idea with brain surgery, but you need like voice control, right? So you need different inputs.
Yeah, so many times it's just actually some of them, they need this where it's just showing you actually the data in front of it, where they don't interact. They just look at it.
Okay.
Right? And I can give you another example where it's also being very heavily used as military, where they just, an operator, he just then look at, you know, what the field soldier is doing. So you then, you know, remote telling. So it's kind of like shadowing, right? We know for end-user computing, where you're shadowing a user. You're seeing what the other one is doing.
So that they're basically providing rich data or metadata about the things they see, right? So they are, it's not just the visuals that you get, but you get the rich data around it through augmented reality. Yeah.
Trust me, that one is the first that you can do a lot of things with that. The next thing is, of course, you go in and interact and you do, you know, when you start doing immersive things, but even doing the remote, you know, assistance in AR is extremely powerful. Of course, so I can tell you another thing, right? So for the AR, it just give you that. This is where, you know, eventually when Apple comes out, because this is what everybody are forecasting is AR, and I do believe that as well, right? Microsoft is definitely helping AR, the phones, the tablets are working. But when things are going to change is when we get the headsets on our devices, on our heads, that will get, you know, on consumer grade, it get, you know, Apple's not cheap, but they're known for massive adoption. So, you know, so either Apple or Facebook or others, we need to get something out there where it get commoditized. And Apple is working on this. I've been doing it for a couple of years. A lot of people are working on that. And that's going to be excited when we know, hopefully the device gets out here in 2020 or 2021. I hope it gets out here this year. Maybe it accelerates for that.
Yeah.
It would be perfect because I think, you know, this COVID-19 is going to be here for a while. And, you know, making people work in a different way, this is the perfect timing for new technology. Hey, and
that's true.
Look at guys, people are doing anything, right?
I mean, I hope COVID-19 will be over soon, Thomas, but I guess you're right. But I mean, and by the way, and I hope you're right about, you know, getting those glasses either from Apple, from someone else who can, you know, provide massive adoption. That I think it would be good, not just for the consumer space, because I mean, if it's Apple, then it will definitely open up for enterprise. But I mean, I guess in looking at organizations, you've got like different personas, right? So would it be fair to say that let's say the frontline worker, you know, those that work on an assembly line or interact with physical equipment, like, you know, you just said military, would this be like the typical workers that benefit from extended reality, like in the first phase? I mean, what we have today is, do you think those type of personas would be the first users that can benefit today?
So it's not a secret that Microsoft bought 100,000 minimum HoloLens devices for military purposes, and they're using the HoloLens 2 in field. But I would say that, of course, the next ones would be the important ones, would of course be the nurses or, you know, the doctors, so they can use that. And of course, why? Well, all this visual data that we have, right, and, you know, with the heat sensors and cameras, and, you know, they can identify patients. I just think there's a lot of things where it can be done more intelligent. But where people are adopting right now, the HoloLens or even VR, right, is, to be honest, in any kind of industry. And hospitals use it, typical for training. They increase that. Companies like DHL, the transport companies, they use it also for training because they speed up the process tremendously. And I think this is where, you know, this is where you, things you potentially take for granted, but it takes time when you have a new human being, you need to put in a new kind of work. And this is where the device, they speed up the process. You can do simulation. You can, with AR, you can go in and tell them, direct them where to go, pick up objects, dismantle an engine in a motor. Why? Without being educated of years experience. How can you do that? Because the software, you know, if a company built that and they dismantle and they tell exactly what to do, this is where it's mind blowing that handicapped people, you know, make them able to fly.
And to your point, I mean, it's not just like the onboarding and, you know, the training. It's also guiding, right? I mean, today in conferences, telephone conferences, you know, where people actually, call centers, that's the word, difficult word. Like in call centers, you tend to have like an operator sitting next to someone and, you know, supporting someone who's new or is getting trained. I guess, you know, with VR, you can do the same thing, right? So if someone is working, like I said, you can just shadow them. It's like, hey, you know what? I just saw you do this. Perhaps suggestion next time you should do this, right? So it's beyond training and sending someone off and, you know, go do your thing.
The VR is VR is what I've seen all kind of actually use cases I would never seen VR in has actually been call centers and where they want these young people in, and instead of buying a lot of monitors, they just want to give them, you know, a cheap VR headset and then be able to work in that. And you know what? It also is the future of things, because that means they don't have to even potentially go to work. They can be home, put on the headset, get all these monitors, look at the ref light and look to the right, left and right, and you see your colleagues, right, as an avatar. You can do that, right?
You can do that. Now we're getting into the future, right? I mean, this is my dream reality.
Companies can do this right now, right? And call centers are looking at this things right now. So call centers, I told a year ago, they want to do this for 8,000 call center users.
Yeah, Thomas, you just mentioned it also requires maybe a different. Well, different kind of human being. That does the adoption of virtual reality in the enterprise also requires a new generation of people working in this enterprise who easily can adopt to these different kinds of realities that maybe, well, my generation or myself are, it's more challenging for us. Do you see this on a day-to-day basis?
So VR is not for everybody. VR, some people do get motion sickness, where with AR, when they work with AR, I see people not having the same problem. Even people who has only one eye, I've seen them work actually better in AR than VR. So AR definitely has more stronger capabilities. But VR, the great thing about VR is you're fully immersive and you go in, you know, to another world with the VR headsets. And as you know, guys know, I work close with Autodesk, and typical for engineering and for architect companies, they are heavily adopting, like really heavily adopting VR right now, where they use it for when they're making the next building or the next, you know, thing. They're doing that right now. And this is not, you know, the next generation young workforce. It's the new generation of engineers who is in the field right now, because they can be much more freedom and they can work much more intelligent in VR. And there's a lot of companies who are in, you know, solving the puzzle of taking big data and converting data to VR, right? So some companies are doing that, and NVIDIA, of course, is also one of them trying to solve that puzzle. I would say that you don't need necessarily a young, brand new workforce for that and the things to change, because it's already happening in different kind of business verticals.
And what amazes me here, actually, the example you're giving is these are not like the frontline workers. These are typical desk workers, right? Normally, they would just sit at a large screen, keyboard, mouse, and, you know, probably 3D mouse. But these are typical desk workers, right? So, I mean, I guess that is a good segue into the question that I had. Like, I mean, most organizations today, they seem to struggle with traditional and, let's say, more legacy application landscape, slowly moving to SaaS. Can you share like an example where customers chosen to use, let's say, application virtualization and extended reality, whether AR or VR, versus actually building a native XR application?
Ooh, that was three things.
Go ahead. We get all time, all day.
Can you?
I mean, I guess so here's the biggest question, right? So majority of the customers, they have just a bunch of applications, and you know, legacy, old school in quotes, Windows applications. How can they move into a virtual or an augmented reality? What's your experience with that? Did you move a customer from like typical screen, keyboard, mouse into like here's a HoloLens or Google Glass, or I'm not really familiar with all the names.
Yeah. So again, what I can tell you is the one who is really successful and some of the companies I work with, the only thing they do is they create content for that, right? Because they're not relying on Citrix or VMware or others. They work, make the application, and then do specific purposes just for their needs.
So that's a native XR application then, right? Or, you know, VR, AR. It's a native app. Yeah. So then, I talked about Magic Leap. Well, it's got some challenges now. I mean, they do spatial computing, right? I mean, when I saw those videos from you and also from Chris Matthew, I mean, it's my dream to have like a normal goggle, which I can wear like 8 hours a day and just have my apps running around me, not having to mount a screen on the wall and then sitting there in a static desk. Is that something that's becoming a reality soon for some customers?
So when Apple comes out, yeah, I would say when we get something that's extremely comfortable. When I work myself with AR and VR, it's only for limited time because it's also I tried experimenting being there a very long time, and I don't think it's healthy for the human brain. You know, I also have a family to take care of. When I used to travel before, right, around the world, I really liked that I was able to put on an immersive headset like the HoloLens or Magic Leap, and I could sit in a train because I've done that many times. So sit in a train, and then I work with my data. I work with my keyboard. I work with my mouse. And now it's just a computer. But I work, nobody can see what I'm doing, right? And it's secure, safe. That is amazing, the freedom of working like that.
I guess safe is a good one as well, right? I mean, if you look at privacy, actually, I have one of those privacy screens for my laptop so that when I'm working on sensitive data, people can't really see from the side. But if you're wearing glasses, no one can see what you are. But you've got that on the screen, right? So this, I guess it's a big benefit for those applications.
And you also, the sound is projecting spatial in your ear, so nobody hears what you're hearing. So that means you can actually be at a conference, you know, even in front with a keynote, because I've done that. And you sit down, listen to the keynote very loud, and then you're doing spatial sound and you're working. So you're both listening, you know, and potentially working, and nobody knows that, which is a sure, secure, safe way of multitasking.
But you really need to time your applause and your laughter.
Yeah, well, then of course, if you are being, I would say, focusing on the keynote, you make sure that you don't have, you know, it too loud.
Yeah.
Your headsets, yeah, listening to music or whatever you do, because there's always going to be those kind of people, right? But it means now that they're looking. What I'm just trying to tell you guys is, imagine where you have so many people wearing these headsets is, you know, when are you going to get people's attention? Because eventually that will get a problem, right? It will get a problem. How are you going to get people's attention if they go around with these headsets all the time? So that's the next curve, right, when we see evolution happening for commoditizing these technologies. And you will also get people that freak out because now you're having cameras. It's actually like taking up your phone and making, you know, you are shooting video camera all the time, right? And you guys know a couple of years ago with the Google, the glasses, is a lot of people, they freaked out. Because, you're walking around with a camera in your face. Guys, this will happen eventually again. It will.
But that's, I guess, I mean, that's the balance, right? I mean, in a way, it's beneficial, right? I mean, it would be great for me if I have such a Google Glass and, what would you say, project metadata about someone who I met before, especially at conferences. I'm not sure. This must, you know, sound familiar to you, Thomas. Like people meeting up, you know, walking up to you and say, "Hey, Thomas," and then you were like, "I've probably seen you before." But yeah, I mean, if I've been on stage, you probably have like 300 people, 1,000 people watching you, knowing that you are Thomas. But it doesn't always mean that you are, you know who that is. I mean, to me, it would be great if it would say like, "Hey, you know, this is Jitse Langendijk. You know, he works at NVIDIA and he's a great guy. You had a chat with him like 6 months ago." So, I mean, I guess to me that would be beneficial, right?
But guys, okay, so something I need to make very clear. This COVID-19 is happening, and it will be here for a while, unfortunately, right? Let's say something more happened, right? I'm just saying that these technologies potentially can help us, because it means also, you know, because we need to be out and also together with people. But these technologies can help us to meet people virtually, right? And that's
but Thomas,
it is a huge thing you can do that for training purposes, but also for getting the social thing. I know people right now are using VR for socially getting attachment, right? Because they are alone, they go into VR, and they mix, you know, a DJ mixing sound. Other people are doing socially conversationing. You can do in where you actually even have where you do karaoke. There's so many things, or you know, do paintball or whatever. All this is, you can do that in VR right now, and it's
but amazing. There is a flip side, right? I mean, at the beginning, I was talking about this French colleague who was in this Laval Virtual, you know, this conference maybe, and they were using the tool Virbella, Virbella.com, and this is where you actually see all the avatars walking around in your HMD. So you get this immersive experience, really walk up to people. And I was asking this colleague, do you sit with your HMD on your head for, I don't know, 4-5 hours? And he said, no, definitely not, because you're just looking at avatars. And maybe this is a generation thing, I don't know. But as soon as you see real people, but then you need different recordings, of course, this can or will be changed. But as long as, at least this is what he told me, as long as you're watching avatars, he immediately switched us over to just a monitor and a keyboard and a mouse. So I'm not sure whether this relates to any other people, but this can be one of the biggest challenges, right?
Yeah. So avatar,
seeing real people. Yeah.
I still think it's good as a one step is you can hear a sound, right? And you get that social, like, oh, it's actually a human who's actually being that avatar. There is technology available. You can actually use your phone and you do 3D scannings of your body. Actually, I worked together with one of my good friends. He's actually making a technology right now. They're doing it. They work in the clothing industry, and they have a new upcoming piece of software where they actually making it possible. You can do scanning your body, and then you can go to websites and actually you can, you know, get the clothes. So, you know, that's the first, that's the one step. Then the second step would of course be that you put on, you know, a VR AR headset, and then you actually see how it looks like. But so the scanning of you know, us as humans, that's already happening, and AI as well, with where they Facebook is working a lot with trying to solve this puzzle. So it's not like they're not aware of this, because they know that. And as you know, I don't know if you guys have seen, there's so much video now where you can actually, the AI can you know, make look like a Jits, you know, so Jits is talking, but it's Ingmar who's speaking, where Jits' face is moving, eyes and mouth, and everybody looks totally reliable.
Yeah. So Thomas, you're still convinced you're actually talking to us, right?
That's interesting.
Yeah. So. Absolutely. I mean, all the technology, and especially with AI, we can create a lot of stuff, and it's very interesting. But in some cases, it's already there. But some things are still for the future. And talking about the future, right, Thomas? If you became a CRO, right, a Chief Reality Officer of a large enterprise with the task
to build a virtual task force with no physical boundaries at all. What would you do? So the option is all yours.
Well, first of all, I would like to understand what the company is doing and what kind of challenge they're facing to be able to give them a solution.
No, but in if you have the opportunity to dream out loud, it's your company, it's your goal, it's your dream, right? And you're working with different kinds of reality. You are the chief reality officer. What would be your goal for the next year? What is it that you want to be able to deliver? For example, you can just dream out loud.
But I'm also not I'm not just a dreamer. I'm actually a realist because I make things happening. And I know what you're saying right now. So,
I can make it specific for you if you want, if that makes it easier.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just say, you know, you are you work for a large finance organization, and in COVID-19 period, so like these days, knowing that this will take 6 months to a year, right? So, how do you move a traditional workforce, thousands of people who are used to sitting at a desk, keyboard, mouse, a lot of Excel tables in front of them? What would be the ideal world? How do you meet up? How do you stay connected? How do you improve, let's say, your employee engagement? So actually, you feel engaged with the company. How do you interact with Excel in an ideal world, right? So not realistic today, because we know that not every headset is ready for it, not every software is ready for it. But let's say you have unlimited budget, you have unlimited development resources, and someone says, Thomas, we're going to hire you as a CRO. In 6 months from now or 12 months from now, we want to be, you know, the best company. Like, we are completely digital, you know, a complete digital transformation.
Yeah, but okay.
Dream out loud. Like,
so, guys, you know, I'm a technology surfer, that I wave the technology how it evolutionizes. And things are still, you know, it keeps on moving all the time. Now, when you work in a company, then you take a kind of responsibility, and that's very different than what I'm doing now, right? And of course, then I would make my decision based on, of course, the budgets I have, you know, what I can do and the challenge I have, and then choose the technologies that would, you know, be able to work within X amount of time. That would be, of course, something I would do, right? And of course, I would, you know, create based on how the world is, you know, the best workforce you can do, with making people being able to both socialize and how people are interacting and being you know, they work best as possible. Because I think this is, you know, it's so important that when you take a leadership part, is that you listen to people and you listen to people and bring things together. Because when you first are that kind of technology owner, then you have a huge responsibility of actually embracing that. Because that's what, you know, this is what IT people, they sometimes forget about, is they have a huge responsibility when it comes to inside the businesses. And, you know,
so then if you had the responsibility and the budget to buy, I don't know, 1,000 HoloLenses.
Yeah, no, but the HoloLens doesn't necessarily need to be the best device, right? It can even be just working from home and getting, you know, the best office you can get, right? With the, you know, what a lot of people are doing now is, you know, they get nice, you know, monitors and cameras and you know, potentially. It could also be that, okay, so they get a VR device, a cheap VR device. So, you know, they meet X amount of time a week just for a small social gathering. You know, and I think that, you know, one thing is video, but another thing is where you do immersive team, what do you say, like...
team meetings, yeah.
But also like where you go, you know, when you go out and have fun, right? What do you call that?
Yeah, like the virtual beers, like the virtual coffee hours.
Yeah, but also go and play with paintball and all that kind of stuff, because you can do that, right? And I think that's, So I see all these people right now doing in video where they're like, you know, oh, we put on hats, we drink a beer. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that's nice. Hey.
Guys,
would it be freaking way cooler that you take your colleague and meet inside VR and you do something?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm game. I mean, but I guess to summarize what you said, I mean, I guess what you're saying is there is no silver bullet today, and it's very hard to predict. Like, if you would have been that CRO, right? It's a makeup role.
So let us agree on this, right, guys? So if I'm allowed to dream out loud, right? So Thomas, the next time when we record this a podcast, we'll be all wearing our head-mounted display, sitting in this virtual room, looking at each other, and having this like almost natural conversation, all in different geographical locations, right?
Well, guys, we can do that, and we should try that. But then I'm also like, guys, do you have an Oculus Quest?
Yeah, send me the stuff.
No, we'll give you the address. All right, but I guess with that, we are ready to wrap up this episode. So I want to thank you all for listening. We hope you enjoyed this snack as we tried to serve you the right amount of EUC for your appetite. And if you have anything you want to add, do you hear, or just want to stay in touch, reach out to us on social channels or by email on podcast@EUCDigest. Cheers, everyone.
This podcast is brought to you by Liquidware. Liquidware is the leader in adaptive workspace management solutions for Windows desktops. Their products cover all facets of management to ensure the ultimate user experience across all workspaces, physical, virtual, DAS, or cloud.